I always used to find afternoon talks stroke classes most challenging, both to the speaker and to the listeners. I don't know whether speakers earn merit or they deserve a place in to wake up everybody out of their siesta. But be it as it may, this is essentially, again, as I said, a continuation, so that we can cover large number of subjects as question answers. The original topic is human relationships, so I would like to speak a little bit about it. And again, to also bring everything into focus. So the first thing first, and I go back to the use of this word dharma, is such a significant word. So all that we aspire and seek for is beautiful, to have harmony, friendship, honesty, sincerity, integrity, all the big words that every human being aspires for. Why is it they remain dreams? And they remain dreams because the basis is not right. That's where the whole crux of the problem lies. And until we set the center right, whatever else we may put around, it won't work. But humanity has to learn by experience, probably. That's what we are going through. And during this phase of transition, when we have not discovered the true center, but we have the aspiration, longing, at that point of time, the play of the asura is that it imitates truth. And that becomes very challenging. So today, if we see a kind of culture spreading around, I don't know what term to use it, woke or sleep or whatever it is. But yes, we all are one, we all are equal, we all are must be together and we all must be united. Justice should be meted out. But so many times humanity has heard about it, brotherhood. And what happens to brotherhood? Brotherhood of the faithful few. And then what happens? The rest is history. So that's what Sri Aurobindo reminds us, that all these dreams, if they are not to remain mere dreams, and they are shattered again and again, precisely because we have to get the basis right. And that basis is the spiritual basis, without which trying to unify the world, create world unity, world state around one idea is a perilous venture. And it's got the minds of people. There is no country wonderful. So at least in India, we are surrounded by very, very lovely neighbors, you know, all around. So I don't need to describe further. So when youngsters, naturally, they catch, there should be no country, everything. I said, yes. People across are waiting that we say there should be no country. Beautiful thought. But tomorrow, it will be bulldozed by all kinds of, which we don't even understand. It will be shell-shocked. And Mother and Sri Aurobindo have foreseen all this. They have spoken about it. Sri Aurobindo in 1916 or 17, in human cycle, he writes about the threat to India from the Red China via Tibet. And then when the 1962 aggression took place, Mr. Arun Nehru, if I am not mistaken, who was the then ambassador, he went to seek help from Kennedy. And this story had been directly, more or less, told to somebody who was very close to Mr. Arun Nehru. He told me that, how he got to know. So he went and he said, tell me what is the situation, night, it seems 3 o'clock early morning. That was such an emergency. Nehru had asked for help. And then he didn't know. He said, I don't know what is the situation because I have never been in the northeast. So the CIA rolled out the map and knew exactly where the positions of the Chinese are. And then he said, why didn't, he said, we'll help because democracy after all, but why didn't you heed the advice of somebody who told this to you just a couple of years back? And he said, who? Who told us this? He said, 2 years back, and he drew this book, Sri Aurobindo's Human Cycle, where it is mentioned. And he was nonplussed, and he of course said, it's not 2 years back. This is, he left his body in 50 and has written it in somewhere in the second decade of the 20th century. So it was amazing, he has foreseen. So you see, there are people who have foreseen, they have, why the need to read Sri Aurobindo, why to, you know, try to tune ourselves to, because it's for the good of the world, safety of the world. Otherwise we'll have dreams, they'll be shattered. So it's true that humanity must become one. How it will become one? Not by a sentiment, not by a wishful thinking. Maybe some common actions, not even by that. It must discover its origin. Without its origin, it cannot. It will end up again and again creating fiasco. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says, I'm not here to repeat the old fiasco. And so with regard to human relationship, I want to read one of his letters. So people in the ashram, sometimes, you know, they used to wonder, particularly Dilip Kumar Roy, expansive, you know, if, very exuberant, vital is overflowing in abundance, or it will go into a shutdown mode when he would suddenly write to Sri Aurobindo, oh, I think I should take sannyas, shave my head and wear an ochre cloth and roam around. And Sri Aurobindo says, I'll be horrified if I see your bald head with all the mosquito bites. So, you know, so he was like that, holding tea parties and everything. And then, you know, he felt this doesn't meet that much approval of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. They never said anything. So he asks a question. That is friendship, affection, all this not allowed or what? Why are people not smiling at each other? And there is a beautiful letter of Sri Aurobindo where he reminds us. Friendships between the sadhaks exist and are encouraged by the mother. Only we seek to found them on a surer basis than that on which the bulk of human friendships are insecurely founded. And this we can apply anywhere. Human relations, national, international relations. It is precisely because we hold friendship, brotherhood, love to be sacred things that we want this change. Because we do not want to see them broken at every moment by the movements of the ego, soiled and spoiled and destroyed by the passions, jealousies, treacheries to which the vital is prone. It is to make them truly sacred and secure that we want them rooted in the soul, founded on the rock of the divine. Our yoga is not an ascetic yoga. It aims at purity, but not at a cold austerity. Friendship and love are indispensable notes in the harmony to which we aspire. It is not a vain dream, for we have seen that even in imperfect conditions, when a little of the indispensable element is there, at the very root, the thing is possible. This indispensable element is the psychic touch. So I remember, just as an aside, when I had gone to Russia with a couple of friends, my wife and two friends from the ashram, whom sort of I had sponsored, and they were not doing any work. Naturally, ashram is seva, so you can't say your job description. So they were held back. We had the visa, but they were held back, and we both went through. Now, naturally, you know, you're very concerned. What's and they're not that fluent with English or anything, and so we're pacing up and down, and then back and forth, and finally, two officers came and they told us, "Who are they?" They said, "Friends." So why have they come here? I said, "I decided to bring them here as friends." So he said, where is the money? So everything, when it was shown to them, he said, but why did you bring them? So I was bison and little pig, I must say. So I said, because I believe that friendship is sacred. I said it with a little emphasis. They are friends. That's it. Why do you need to further? Why? If you are friends, you are friends. That's the end of the story. I said, because I believe that friendship is sacred. I don't know, those words acted like magic. So for a moment something happened, some conversation took place, which thankfully there's a lot of advantages of not knowing the language, because you don't know whether you are being abused or accused or whatever is going on. And then they were released. And so we went across. So the world has seen enough of all this. We have seen, because the basis is not right. So what Sri Aurobindo is saying, it is not an ascetic yoga, but we want the true basis, secure basis. Now, the question is that how are we to persuade governments? Yes, governments are governments. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says, this erring race of mankind always believes in governments, machinery, systems, organizations. What it does not understand, slightly paraphrased because I don't remember the exact words, so he says, what it doesn't understand is that which thou art within, that outside thee thou shalt enjoy. No power can save you from the truth of your being. And I often give this example. You can take a donkey. Donkeys are very nice creatures, by the way. It's not racist or pejorative. Racist, the biggest racism is, I am a human, this is a donkey. Well, but anyways, so they are nice, sweet creatures. Unless you get onto the backside. But the point is that, you know, you can put a donkey in the best of material conditions. Will it change? You have Sri Aurobindo's famous remark. There was actually a donkey called Bodo who used to run. Who would not run the race in the race until people, you know, he was just standing. Everybody, there was a donkey race in Pondicherry. This is a real story. And the donkey was picked up by the mother. I want that donkey. And then suddenly all the sadhaks, run, Bodo, run. And suddenly he ran and came first. So as the story goes, this was told to Sri Aurobindo, this is a strange donkey. He is running about all the time here and there. But when you give some work to the donkey, he doesn't work. So Sri Aurobindo remarked, typical sadhak. Typical sadhak. Everybody will meditate, be quiet, work somebody else will do. So a donkey remains a donkey unless it changes its very basis of existence. So what we do not understand is that we may create superstructures, systems, mechanisms, but unless we change, things won't change. So how will governments change? Again, we go back to the same problem. It is the change of the individuals which presages the change of the collectivity. If we start getting engaged in collective change without engaging with individual change, it doesn't work out. So the first and foremost necessity is the individual change. We can have opinions, we can have viewpoints, but Sri Aurobindo was very clear on this issue. There is the famous story of Anil Baran, some of us may know. Anil Baran was regarded as intellectually the most, somebody who was intellectually who could understand Sri Aurobindo, like Nalnida, of course. Nalnida is a Manas Putra. And Sri Aurobindo had given him only one advice. Don't let the asan shake. Bhenge devina, that's how he said, asan. Asan is your seat. And so it happened, all the rooms that Sri Aurobindo would move on from, those rooms were given to Anil Baran. And after independence, he got seized by this idea of Hindu-Muslim unity and all India, Akhand Bharat, one India. So he even made a party. He went away from the ashram despite mother telling him, don't do this. Things are not ready. And so he went. And of course, what happened to him spiritually is not worth mentioning. Very in frustration, a person, you know, leaves the body. So there are many such ideas which come, but we have to first get the basis right. And we can take this Akhand Bharat. So, one India, undivided. Now this is another very interesting subject. What is a nation unit? But I don't want to get into that right now. So how it will happen? When mother was asked, she said that Pakistan will split in 5 parts and they will join together as a confederation. So confederation of nations is a kind of future for humanity. Not a world state the way we envisage it, because it's dangerous. One idea may take over everybody. Bulldoze. So confederation, where everybody grows with their own beauty and their own culture and their own approach. Divine wants unity in diversity. And therefore, but they come together. So how they will come together? Again, we can pick up the secret from individual life. And that's to do with human relationship. People often ask, they say, how to see the divine in everyone? I said, yes, it's difficult. Sri Aurobindo once remarked, sometimes I have to also take it by faith. It's a challenge. So, but how to see the divine in everyone? Very simply, first we have to get past the appearances. What the problem is of whether nations or, for instance, right now we see Russia and America are on two different, it seems for a long time they have been on two different sides. What does the mother say? They must come together. Russia, America and India must come together for the good of the world. So it is bound to happen. How it will happen, we don't know. Situations, circumstances will bring them together. All three will bring something new. Even she spoke about the dangers of Indian occupation. All this she has foreseen. And she saw Chinese invasion possibly, which she dreaded. This shouldn't happen. She spoke about American invasion to save from the Chinese. But then she said it will be very humiliating. She saw Russian invasion, Russian occupying India. They said that's all right, but both have a mystic tendency, so it won't really help either. So a lot of things are going on in the world which we don't understand when we look at the surface. A mixing, a churning. But when we look behind appearance to bring out the core. So for every nation, those who are really interested in the good of that nation, whatever nation it be, bring out the soul of the nation. That's exactly what in the morning I was referring to. What is the soul of America? That should be brought out. It has that power. Soul of Europe, soul of, I mean, different France. But even when there is a good aspiration, the vital is mistaken for the soul. And that creates danger. What happened in Germany? Searching for its soul, it mistook the vital being for the soul. So one has to understand that basis should be set right. Let's say country like India or maybe little easier there, but Russia and America. If you discover the soul, more and more people who discover, it will put a internal psychic pressure on the nation to bring out its own true soul and live its own true destiny. This is one part. And then as an individual, we need to discover. So we come back to going behind appearances, seeing the divine in everything. So it's a challenge. So what do we do? So we cannot see the divine, but we can see divine manifestation. That's within our limits. Of course, we can see the divine, but I'm saying it's not easy. So what is divine manifestation? When we see a movement of beautiful gesture, love which is full of the spirit of sacrifice, suddenly the utterance of a wisdom. There are many such divine manifestations, qualities if we want to put it, which we need to appreciate in each other. This is the secret of human relationship. Instead the ego begins to rub. Again the basis is ego. If the basis is ego, it will always be a compromise. Not sacrifice. These are two very different terms people don't understand. So relationship can be based on compromise, often in the husband-wife scenario I encounter, being a psychiatrist, people ask this, I don't want to compromise. So I have to tell them that compromise is one thing and sacrifice is another thing. People think they are two are same. Sacrifice is refining, purifying, uplifting. compromises both stand at the same level and are, you know, sort of trying to tweak into each other. Compromise is what ego does. Sacrifice is what the soul does. Joyously, willingly. So one simple thing and with which we can enter into questions is to learn to see the beauty of others. Everybody has something beautiful. Sometimes just a smile. And smiles are so beautiful. Just to, you know, because they are the expression of something deep in the heart. Just to look at that. There is a lot of muck in the world. And if you look at it individually, collectively, it will be disgusting. And the more we think about it, talk about it, it increases. It doesn't help to tell somebody you are a fool. Even a fool doesn't like to hear it. But show a fool that there is a touch of intelligence in his foolishness. That he is capable of, see, this is the story of Kalidas. Where his wife tells him, you are a fool. And is disheartened. She throws him out of the house. What does the goddess Kali tell him? You are capable of being intelligent. This is the difference. It's about communication. And he becomes one of the foremost poets in Sanskrit. So much so that Shurvindo says that between... In India, Vyas, Valmiki and Kalidas, if you just take these three, they are enough to, you know, so wonderful they are. So one way in communication, which is a critical part in human relations, is that, you know, there was a film where one person was deaf and the other person dumb and they, you know, lived happily ever after. So somebody was saying, so nice. I said, yeah, that's easier. When one cannot speak, the other cannot hear, so relationship will be beautiful. Problem is when one person speaks and the other listens or doesn't want to listen. See, this vak, this speech is such a beautiful instrument to build a bridge and it destroys. If only we can practice speech. That's why in India, there was so much emphasis at one point of time just to the tapasya of speech. The Gita speaks about it. The speech, what it should be, and Shobhinda has written so many letters. So speech, when we speak about others, when look, try to look, something beautiful must be there. And we falter, no doubt about it, but we should do the course correction. And that's how I think human relationships for the moment, till we discover the true psychic basis. When we discover the psychic basis, then automatically we see truth, good, beauty here, there, everywhere, some way or the other, because it's the nature of the psychic. It is a swan, so it picks out, separates water from the milk. But till we do that conscious effort to see the beauty, goodness, even in oneself and others, and also to communicate it so that it increases. That's how things will increase in the world. And by pointing out all the darkness and filth, it increases equally. The last thing is that a rule of life is whatever we pay more attention to, that increases. If we pay more attention to the divine presence in us, it will increase despite all the darkness. If we pay more attention to the evil in the world, it will increase. It feeds on our attention. Evil is very attention-seeking behavior. But laugh in the face, is an advice given by the mother. Laugh in the face of the adversary. This is something you see in Ramayana. Ravana is all, you don't know who I am, you don't know who I am, my 10 heads, 20 hands, all this. Ram just smiles, says, okay. Shall we play the game? Shall we have the arrow match? You're supposed to play that. So laugh in the face of the adversary and it tends to melt. And these are deep mystic experiences in dreams, in real life. By giving too much importance, we strengthen the adversary, whether individually or collectively. Let us keep on invoking the beauty of the future. Trust in that beauty of the future. Not speak too much about the badness, evil. Not that it will vanish. This question was, no. But by increase of goodness, eventually it will meet its own end. he will collapses under its own weight, implodes. Okay, so lest it becomes a talk, so let's have some questions. We have about maybe 45 minutes off. Please, Makrandhai. Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry,
but you're a little soft. Thank you, Alok Bhai. I was so fascinated by your reference to Sri Aurobindo predicting what China might do, especially how it would overrun Tibet.
Yes.
And attack India. So it's very important in a different context, because today is the birthday of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Mm. And so we can wish him long life and good health. But it's fascinating because the ideal of human unity was, of course, first written in the Arya. And 1919, the First World War ended, the Great War. So how did Sri Aurobindo know about this? The answer is that the postscript, which refers to this, was added in 1949.
Yes.
After the Chinese Revolution. That is why he mentions Red China. And the book was actually published, the second edition of the book. The first edition was published in his lifetime, but the second edition was published in 1950.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to say, Sri Aurobindo was so well-versed with contemporary world affairs and politics, and his understanding of international relations was spectacularly ahead of the people who were ruling India at that time. Now, just a small correction. You mentioned Arun Nehru. The Indian ambassador to the United States was B.K. Nehru.
Okay, that's Arun, why I said I'm not sure.
No, yeah. Arun Nehru comes much later.
Much later.
He's a part of Rajiv Gandhi's cabinet, kitchen cabinet, number two.
Yes.
Along with Arun Singh and
B.P.
Singh.
Yeah.
But here's the point. Another important thing is that when China invaded, India, as you know, in 1952, Nehru wrote these letters to President Kennedy, 1962. So Sri Aurobindo predicted that this would happen in 1949, soon after the communist revolution and takeover of China. In 1962, when China invaded India, and they came into Assam, they came so far.
Jorhat, Tejpur.
Exactly, Tejpur. They had overrun Arunachal Pradesh.
I have been posted there. So.
You were posted there. So anyhow, now the secret letters that Jawaharlal Nehru wrote to President Kennedy have been published. And he was begging America to intervene, send armaments, weapons, planes. And that was a moment, because before, I'm sorry I'm taking too long, but we started with this when in my first talk about the Indo-American relations, 4th of July. That's why I'm saying it's very important. Now, before President Kennedy became the President of America, in Le Monde, he had written a long essay proposing this union of the democracies, union meaning an alliance. And Nehru, with his socialistic tendencies and his mistaken notion of Asian unity, had declined a Security Council membership for India, which was proposed by the United States through his sister, Vijayalakshmi Pandit, who was India's permanent representative to the United States. It was given to China, Red China, instead.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to say is that the U.S. wanted this alliance long ago. Nehru turned it down. When China invaded India, he begged Kennedy for help, and U.S. did help. But it was not required because China stopped the invasion. We know what happened. And again, India drifted into the Soviet camp because of his daughter, Indira Gandhi, who was installed as the prime minister after the suspicious death of Shastri in Tashkent. And India went into the Soviet bloc. Of course, we were officially non-aligned during the Cold War. But these are very important things because, as I said, we are in at the foothills, as Henry Kissinger said before he died, of Cold War 2.0. So Thank you so much.
So one take-home point of all this is that Sri Aurobindo is keeping watch over all the world movements. We need to be clear, and in the agenda several times we see Mother speaks about it. She even spoke about Sri Aurobindo taking interest in the Pope's selection, because he has his own way through which he is keeping watch over all the major world movements. He was doing it even post coming to Pondicherry. She has himself said that from his room in Pondicherry, we know his intervention in the Second World War. Since you mentioned about His Holiness Dalai Lama, he had visited the mother. I'm sure you know, there is an interview published, and he asked the mother, and the mother has blessed the freedom of Tibet. So these, we must understand that there are immense, tremendous forces at work, which we don't know today how they are going to take shape. She spoke about, again, this Akhand Bharat breaking is happening in that direction. So there are forces at work which are far beyond the human reckoning. But what as human beings we can do, if we are in the privy of the gods, we can read them. If we have so placed that we can play a major role in alignment, yes, by all means. But one thing we all can do is to hasten our own spiritual evolution. Not with the idea of personal mukti or salvation, but every one single soul staying upon earth evolves to the next degree, hastens many other soul climbing out. There is a very famous saying, and this I may mention about the demographics, which is another challenge which countries are going to face. So, you see, people, one advice was that one community is having 12 children, you should also have 12 children. But what is told in Indian scripture is very interesting. It's there in Sikh scriptures also. A true follower, it says, ek Sikh, sawa lakh ke barabar hota hai. What it means is that a person who is evolved inwardly, we don't value its power. It outweighs a million of those who are on the other side of the fence. His presence alone. See, what did mother speak about Sri Aurobindo when first time she meets him? He whom we saw yesterday is here upon earth. His presence is enough. So this is the way that Sri Aurobindo proposes, that each one of us, and he also writes in one of his letters that what he wanted each one of us to evolve to a point where wherever we stand, hundreds gather naturally. This is the power of yoga. So he keeps on saying that, you know, we don't want mere spread of the idea is not enough. We want real yogins. The power of real yogins, which once upon a time governed India, that yogin, the yoga shakti has to wake up. So again, we go back to the same thing, first, spiritual evolution. And again, spiritual evolution is not isolated escape into some cult or sect and through that. But evolution within the psychic, the spiritual, the transformation. And then while living in the world, it has a great impact. Morphogenetic resonance. And that's why Auroville was created. Incidentally, Auroville was created to realize the dream of world unity, to outweigh the possibility of the Third World War as an occult action. And when she was asked how, she says, when human beings are always coming together to fight and quarrel, let them come together to create something beautiful and new. The very fact that human beings come together, these may look like small little actions, but they have great impact because they are actions which well from the depths of our soul. So that's the solution. People should come together and join together in this common aspiration. Okay, any questions? You can take that up.
It seems the breakup in 1908 of the Congress in Surat, the two factions, the battle is still continuing, except that it is more intensified now then probably it was at a party level in those days.
I have a small little comment to it. Humorous comment. So yes, Congress has been breaking up into various factions. So my comment is, jisko Bhagwan ne tod diya, wo kahan judega? Okay. 7, 1907. That which the divine, because it was at Sri Aurobindo's behest that the two factions broke. And we see that, you know, this is how it's going on breaking. Mother also spoke many things. I didn't want to get into it, like 62 war, the role of the Divine Mother in 71 war, her role, and you know, all that she spoke about India's destiny, and she needed just one man who can stand up. All this is there. And incidentally, she even spoke about that one man. She said, there was one man who could have... she said, I need only one man. One strong man, that's all. She didn't say, I need many people and party government. One man who can become an instrument, like Arjun becomes an instrument. And she says, there was one man, but they killed him, assassinated him in Kashmir. Shyama Prasad. He had come to... He went to inaugurate, and see, that was the origin of Jansang. And so there are the point is, there are tremendous forces at work. For John F. Kennedy's death, she said it's an occult death, because he would have been very useful for the work. So there are many things which are happening which we don't understand. We have to learn to look behind appearances and always be full of hope. These are things within our hands. That look behind appearances, always be full of hope, full of the certitude of the future. When mother was asked, what should we teach our children? One of the things she said, to always have this certitude of truth's final victory. We see it, if you see long spaces of time, Satyamev Jayate Nanritam. Actually, we can see it. Long. But then she was asked, what do you mean by truth? She said, oh, everybody thinks that he is good and his truth is truth and no other truth is. So first we must be very clear. Truth's final victory is the divine's will's final victory. No human will can ultimately stand against the divine will. That's how she gave a message in 55. Put yourself deliberately on the side of the divine and the victory is certain. This is the message of the Second World War. This is the message of Mahabharata. This is the message of Ramayana. It takes time. It takes long. But eventually, if there is a divine, it stands to logic and common sense. So our work is to align to the divine. That's all. We may not be Arjun, but we can be Yuyutsu. You see what happens to Yuyutsu. It's a very interesting story in Mahabharata. He is a Kaurava. And before the war, they are asked, you can change sides right now. You can't change later on. So this is the lone man, soldier or not soldier, he is one of the chieftains who walks away from the Kaurava to the Pandava side. He says, though all my brothers are this side, yet truth and dharma is on that side. And strangely, he is the one who survives all other Kauravas die. He looks after the parents. He looks after the kingdom for 18 long years. He's one of those characters about whom many people don't know. So this is all that is given to us, and we should be faithful to what is given to us. To deliberately, consciously choose that side of the divine. Whatever the appearance is, however dark it may seem, doesn't matter. Not to keep on doing, oh, darkness is there, darkness is there. We are multiplying it. But the sun which is going to come, full of faith, full of trust, full of confidence in the grace, individual life, even again, human relationship. I've seen things going on a brink. Brink, literally brink. No, I must separate. We must get rid of each other. You say, have patience. You can always separate. I'm not saying that, you know, one should drag on. That is the easy part. How about doing some difficult thing? Easy things are easy to do. What is the difficult thing? Continue to grow in compassion. Continue to be generous that, look, the other person has faults and difficulties, but still, there is something known as love, which can continue to love despite everything. And I can tell you these things are not theory. At least, I'm not speaking a single word which is theory. And it is so beautiful. It has a power to change. And then after a time, a wave has passed and everything is beautiful. And then you realize, oh, thank God, I didn't do a folly at that point of time. compassion, love, these are the qualities to be practiced. This is what spirituality is about. It's not just sitting in meditation and concentration. That's one part of it. But to cultivate these beautiful qualities. Mother speaks about the 12 qualities. And she also says, by the way, they are not fixed to 12. She says there are many more, but because of the 12 petals, the 12 pearls which comes from there, they are essential. At least 12 you must have. That's how it is. Minimum is 12. Not the maximum. And life offers so many opportunities. So in a relationship, we can turn it entirely into yoga and progress like anything. I have spoken this story of Mirabai, same way. Turn everything into yoga. Turn all things to honey. This is the law of divine living. Okay, questions?
I didn't want to bring up this. I thought it was more of a political questions kind of thing, so I didn't want to talk about it. But I think this whole session has brought up about that Akhanda Bharat and all this thing. Because what I read about Sri Aurobindo and on the Akhanda Bharat and all this thing, but I thought that it would be more political kind of thing, but I think it's going on, so I want to ask this thing.
Yes. Still the question is yet to come.
Yeah, so there are a couple of things in here. You know, as I was growing up, and in fact, all of us, many of them, for 30, 40, 50 years ago, in this world, there were like 80 countries or 90 countries. Today, we got more than 200 countries around the world. And so it is dividing more and more. That's one thing. On the other hand, what we have also seen during our lifetime, like there was originally it was a Russia, and then it started grappling and it became USSR, and then now it is again back to Russia, and the other countries are again back into their own forms, and it goes on into Europe and the other countries also, same thing. So what about this Akhanda Bharat, what we are talking? Okay. One thing. We have seen the most fanatics and those Islamic nations and that thing. There is a lot of, it's just only, you believe in only one, that's it, no more. If you don't believe, you should be chopped off. Today, what we are seeing in two of those Middle Eastern countries, there is a Sanatan Mandir has been created. That is so surprising that the thought process and all those things in those countries are changing. Yes. On one hand, and the other it is not.
So, several things are here. One is, what is a nation unit? There is a whole, I think, webinar was held. Vladimir, Radhe, I was also part of it. And I would suggest that for the detail, that would be a wonderful place to go and look up. But speaking of India, though I have spoken about Akhanda Bharat, written about it also in different points. Now, when a country is, or a nation unit has been established spiritually as one unit. And where is Akhanda Bharat beginning? It's, if you read the story of Sati, which is in way back times, we see the 51 or 52, depending on the story, parts of the Sati, you will have the entire Indian map, Sri Lanka, Kashmir, northeastern part, and Hinglaj and Afghanistan, you see it. And if you look at it, because it's a spiritual unity, it will assert itself. So one is divisions based on later on religions have come, politics has come, ideologies have come, but spiritual truth always ultimately prevails. If it doesn't, there will be dissolution. That's the whole pralaya, the reason for pralayas. So it is bound to prevail because it is one unit, one unity. And you can even feel it now. Get past the barrier of religion. The Punjabis, sometimes they don't know whether they are on this side or the other side. It is equally true of the Sindhis. So, yes, politically, the divisions of countries have been largely politically motivated. Why they are motivated? Because each one wants to rule on a, you know, plot of land which he can call his own. That takes us to Middle East. Why the Sanatan Dharma Mandir has come? Because somebody has understood where is the rub. Dukti rag, kya bolte hain? The weak spot. What is the weak spot? We think it is religion. No, it is money. God uses even evil, things which are evil, for his own purposes. How he used Duryodhan to bring together all those arrogant fellows who had to be destroyed. So, outwardly it is, oh, Islamic countries. What is Islaming about any of these countries? I'm talking of even Islam in the if at all, you know, in its original say. It's all about money. So, ultimately, where is the world heading? Some people have realized this truth that, well, petrol is going to run out. We can't sustain this economy for good. And there are some who have realized that, well, Indian market is growing and this is something which can withstand. So you bring it. And that's a point of time when people agree. It never was about religion. See, political religion was always to control the masses, because why they created converts? The converts were created because if you don't have people with the same belief or same belief system or faith, faith is a big word, belief system, there will be always a counter pressure. But when people adopt the same religion, apparently same habits, so they accept an invader. And in India, this is a big problem, because in India, people don't know what is their identity. Very frankly, the Indian Muslim does not know what his identity is, whether he is an Arab or he is an Indian. And is constantly, when you don't know your identity, you vehemently assert something which is not you, because that's the only way you can hold on to. And the day one realizes this is your identity, it will crumble like a house of cards. And why this doesn't happen, again, bringing the Hindu-Muslim context, let the Hindu be a true Hindu, worth the Sanatana Dharma, like what Arjun, Shri Krishna's, Bhishma's, that Hindu. Each such person standing by, many will gather around. So right now we see a hammering going on, many things. And Islamic world, it has been predicted by Islam that it is going to finish. Of course, Kayamat ka din, and of course they say the whole world, but it's their world which is going to collapse, which is very evident. The writing is so clear on the wall. And so, sooner or later, this is going to change. We are talking about things 100 years, 200 years down the line. Already the process has begun. Just wait for that. So, Akhand Bharat is again needed, because when you have a spiritual unit, but dismembered body, we have in India that Khand Murti ki puja nahi karte. You don't, you know. So, it is like a Khand body. The body must become whole to exercise the full power, and it is happening already. That would be a big subject, so I'm not entering into it. Yes, the lady next to the handsome hero.
My son.
Yeah, so handsome mother, I mean, what do you say? Beautiful mother of handsome son, yeah.
I was just wondering if Sri Aurobindo or the mother said anything about Kalki's coming.
Yeah, okay.
He's been born and he's going to be revealed relatively soon. So I was just wondering.
Yeah, so again, this I have given a number of talks, sorry for referring again and again to Aroma, because I have given a few talks on Kalki Avatar. And I have logically... You see, Shobindo and the mother did believe in avatar and avatarhood. Not only believe, there are several writings of Sri Aurobindo, the chapters dedicated not only about the avatar, the process of avatarhood, what it means, what is the work he comes to do. And some places very obliquely, they have also hinted. They didn't say, I am an avatar. But when somebody said that in this life, you have come as an avatar, what were you in previous lives? So, Shobindo didn't say, no, don't call me an avatar. He said, we were there as vibhutis in previous lives. So then, Shobindo was asked by the same disciple, what do you mean as vibhutis? What were you doing as vibhutis? So he said, we were carrying on the earth's evolution. So he asked that, what is meant by carrying on the earth's evolution? He said, to explain this, I have to write the whole spiritual history of mankind. Then when Champaklalji drew the feet and showed this, Shobindo wrote the avatar. At one place, the mother says very openly, she says, I always knew of Sri Aurobindo as the last avatar in the physical body, which is what Kalki is about. Then she also spoke of the suggestion, collective suggestion, that Kalki will be lame. One of the reasons why Sri Aurobindo's one foot got, was fractured. But leaving aside all this, pure logically, there are three criteria of avatar, which the Gita is the one place which gives the doctrine of avatarhood. So we have to turn back, because what does the Gita say? And in Sri Aurobindo's scheme, we have the 10 avatars. It's an evolutionary parable. It connects the inner thread of our journey. Just like rebirth, there is an inner thread is with the soul. So avatars are the soul of an age which connect from one to another, making sense of the different things going on the surface. So the three criteria that Gita gives is, one is yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata. So when there is a decline of dharma, again, he's not using the word adharma, he's using the word decline of dharma. Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata, abhyutanam dharmasya tadatman sajamyam. So I come to, once again, release the dharma from all the entanglements. Then he says, paritranaya sadhunam, to release those who are good, but they are caught up in the web of ignorance. Vinashaya cha duskritam, punish the evil doers. Dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yoge yoge. Okay, so dharma siglani. If we go back 100 years, it is the extreme. The asuras of scientific materialism, positivism, psychoanalysis, I could name quite a few more, have completely captured the mind of earth. And India, where dharma was at one point of time reigning, what had happened to India? Dharma siglani, superstitions, small little things in which Shani ki puja, Rahu ki puja, all kinds of things, it had degenerated into that great civilization where Bhishma and Arjun, and they were the upholders of dharma. But where it had gone into all kinds of, touch me not and this and that. So it was a complete dharma siglani. So, of course, we see a progression of darkness before that, and we still see darkness, but never the kind of darkness before or during that first 50 years of the previous century. If we take the totality of things, never we see a darkness as intense. So dharma siglani, that's the period Mother and Sri Aurobindo are there. What do they do? Bringing out the dharma, the Vedas. So we see Sri Aurobindo bringing out the new and deeper understanding of the Veda based on the Nirukta that Sri Krishna himself gives him while he's in Alipur jail. In fact, that whole episode of Sri Krishna handing him over literally the baton of the coming age. If you read his life, again, I'm cutting short many events, that how Sri Krishna literally hands him over the baton of the age. It starts from 1908 and completes in 1926 when Sri Krishna is completely identified. The previous avatar identifies with the avatar of the future, gives him a new dharma, yuga dharma. So he brings out the truths of the Vedas, the truth of the Gita, the truth of the Upanishad, which is so novel, which makes so complete sense. I know as a youngster studying my medicine and taking interest in all this, and I read a lot of interpretations of the Vedas and Upanishads and the Gita, and ultimately I said it doesn't make sense. I mean, things are there, but there are many things which my heart revolted against. No, I don't accept it. It's only when I read Sri Aurobindo that I realized, okay, there is this profound truth which he brings out. So Vedanudharte, releasing the truth of the Vedas. Veda not just a book, but the Veda is the living scripture in the heart of every creature, in the heart of creation. So Sri Aurobindo brings that. Then we know that paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam, extreme form took place in the first half of the previous century, when imperialism, communism, when the Second World War, fascism was at its peak. Who intervened? Often people say British Empire, but then the day British Empire dragged Sri Aurobindo to the jail. And literally the case is titled Empire versus Aurobindo Ghosh. And he did not win only in that court. Look, where is the empire now? Paritranaya sadhunam, vinashaya cha duskritam. Where is Hitler? Where is Stalin? Where is Mussolini? Where are those who tried to trample the earth with the tread of the Titan. Gone. So if we look at the First and Second World War, they are more gory than any that any of the avatars faced. Before Hitler, our Ravan appears like a saint. And even, you know, Kansa and Duryodhan look like fairly decent guys. And Shurbindo, and he said, it's not later on taking, he said it is mother's war. And there's so many stories about the Second World War. There's a beautiful book, George von Brickheim's book on Hitler's God and many other, his intervention, independent people like Antonio Silvio, that book Lost Footsteps. So he completely put himself on the side of the Allies to break the forces of downward gravitation. Had Hitler succeeded, and had the Japan and Hitler axis won, Shobindo says that India would have been taken, at least India, no, world would have been gone back several thousand years behind. He was that concerned about it. When Subhash Chandra Bose, in that idealism, sentimental idealism, was going and shaking hands, he saw the picture and said he doesn't know what he is doing. So he was actively intervening, just like Krishna on the battlefield, doing nothing yet doing everything. So the second criteria, paritranaya sadhuna vinashaya cha duskritam, dharma sansthapnaya, what is the new demand of the age? Matter and spirit both must be synthesized. We don't want only spiritual upliftment with material life being uncared for. And equally, we know that focusing only on the material, neglecting the spiritual, is a kind of poverty. And Shurabindo brings the dharma for the new age, where matter and spirit should be complement to each other. Matter must fulfill the dreams of the spirit, and spirit must be the breath which must move matter. And that new dharma is that spiritual evolution and eventually the new race. So any which way, I am cutting a long story short because I have spoken about it length. Every which way, there are so many remarks, every which way, if there is a Kalki avatar, I am using the word if, it goes with Sri Aurobindo. The sword, of course, sword of discernment, sword of knowledge, the white horse, the divine power, force, lame, even that. So everything fits into that extreme darkness. Even it is said that he will drive away the Mlechhas. And during the time of the British Empire, now we can use the word racism, but people know that the word used for many of the British occupants of India was Mlechha. This was the word actually used. So if you really look at it, it fits into that completely. Now people are waiting for Kalki coming after 432,000 years. I have spoken about that also, why that calculation is not right and the calculation falls here. But that's a different subject altogether. So if Kalki avatar, it's not that he wanted that he should be known as Kalki avatar. Avatar is always a revelation in the soul of man. But since you raise the question, yes, Sri Aurobindo and the mother are the Kalki avatar. And we see actually from the world before them and the world after them, there is a sea change. Whether it be, may call it technology, science, humanity. And I said one of them is that women. In 1928, when there was a lady by the name of Jayadi, who was supposed to be a reincarnation of Ma Yashoda, and Yashoda Ma of Sri Krishna, his physical mother. So she had managed to come there because it was not easy for a woman to come. She said, I'm going to Rameshwaram and via Pondicherry. And then she didn't go to Rameshwaram. And Sri Aurobindo asked her, don't you want to go to Rameshwaram? She said, I have seen the living Rameshwaram. Why should I go there? But then she one day tells Sri Aurobindo, don't make me a woman in next life. This is 1928. So he smiles and says, why? She says, you have no clue what women have to undergo. Do you have any idea how I have come? So Sri Aurobindo smiles and says, don't worry. You don't have to change. I am changing the world. There are his words. She noted. You don't have to change. Woman doesn't have to become man. I am changing the world where woman will not only claim equal right, it's not stopped yet. She's going to spearhead. And really the world suffers because of the feminine element staying in the background. She brings all that is beautiful in human life. And so now we see things changing. And even now the civilizations which are going to crumble are those who are still holding back the feminine energy. And there I must say that's the problem of the Islamic world. More than anything else. The feminine is completely suppressed and held back. So what happens? It is becoming more and more ruthless. And wherever feminine has started taking the lead, the world has been moved by softer, tender, compassionate feelings, more intuitive side. So any which way you look, it's a whole subject. But the world is changing. From 1950 prior and 1960 downward, you see many things. International Yoga Day, on the day when Sri Aurobindo announced that Arya will be launched, 21st June, that's the day. He announced that the Arya will be launched. People are beginning to take interest. So yes, if you ask me, Kalki, and it's not a question of faith, I have my own inner revelation, but that's a different story. But very logically, if there is one person who fits into that, I feel ashamed to say Sri Aurobindo fits into something. But yes, it is Sri Aurobindo and the mother as the avatar. But this, of course, not to be thrust upon people. Yeah, that's understood. Yes, please.
Thank you, Alokji. I'm wondering if Sri Aurobindo and the mother had any thoughts on the four ashrams of life?
Yes.
And how do we, I guess in today's context, try to live in that, like, how do we know when the transition is coming? How do we prepare?
Okay.
Just, yeah.
Okay, so yes, they spoke about it in the Renaissance of India or the Foundations of Indian Culture, about the four ashramas. As a psychiatrist, I'll put it a little bit in context of today's times. So first 25 years, the student life, and it's significant, your question, because student life is not just about training for job and all that. Brahmacharya ashram. So what does brahmacharya means? Brahmacharya literally means focusing all your energies towards the highest. That is Brahman. So all your daily life routine should be inbuilt, ingrained, habituated so that all your energies naturally turn toward the highest. And what is the first purushartha? There are four purusharthas according to along with the four ashramas. For some of us, we may not be aware. I'll just quickly say the four ashramas are the four seasons of life. I prefer than the stages of life. Okay, so the four seasons are childhood to youth and youth to middle, middle to elderly group and elderly to the old age. And there are four purusharthas, four things to be gained. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So it's very interesting. It used to fascinate me that why dharma? Some people try to put it in the third ashram. No, dharma is the basis. So the first ashram is about dharma. Dharma includes science, technology, everything. Because there is a dharma of the tree. There is a dharma of the animal. You must understand the dharma of a snake. And if you understand, you will not be afraid. Nor you will kill mercilessly. So dharma was the basis that there is the dharma. You need to understand Swadharma and, you know, every kind of dharma. Dharma included all comprehensive knowledge of the truth of things. That's what in student days. Not just a mechanical knowledge. There are the trees and you're not taught that why you should not cut. So now we have to learn it through the back door. So dharma of the tree, what it does, what it gives. So the dharma is the first purusharta. You must establish dharma inside. Again, nothing to do with religion as it is understood, organized religion, least of all, which is a blasphemy against God, if you ask me. If there is ever any blasphemy, sorry for the strong words, it's organized religion. It's, you know, somebody controlling your minds and heart. Well, so this was never dharma. Dharma was something which was sprang up from within. First, purushartha, 25 years. And I feel that's sadly missing today. There's no connect with your deepest self. People don't even know student. This is the time when you can really, now I'm not going into methods. All this I've spoken of and they're there on YouTube. Then the next purusharta is grahastha ashram and artha. Kama and artha. So wrestle with the four. Graha means hold. You hold property, you hold family, you hold different things. So, but dharma should be the basis. That's why Shri Krishna says in the Gita that you can have your desires, but on the basis of dharma. It's not like you have to, you can't see a movie, you are an ascetic, you can't enjoy, or husband, wife cannot have children. No, everything is fine. They can make love, everything. But it should be on the basis of dharma. Dharma should be the back, behind, as the governing principle of karma. And what you learn during grahastha ashram, you gain artha and calm. You develop, you lead a life where you are fulfilling desires, but you also understand the limitations of desire, and you train yourself, because there are tendencies and propensity in human nature. They undergo sanyama during this phase. So sanyama, sacrifice, yajna, all this was emphasized at one point of time in the Indian culture, and it was a beautiful system. So you don't change people, you change yourself. Okay, so kama and both these, so I use the word midlife. Then midlife, you see that there is a transition which comes. Almost in a lot of people come to me, adolescent crisis and midlife crisis. So transition is a time when you can completely change over. You can relook at life. So what was the third ashram? Vanaprastha. So while you still have the kama and are running through your this thing, but you are seeking a deeper meaning. So vanaprastha was, you take a break, go to Pondicherry, I am saying that, okay, to learn, read books, stay in the company of the sages, to learn about the higher things of life. See how many problems it could solve. Mother-in-law, daughter-in-law problem. So I keep telling Indian families, you are a mother-in-law, give it to daughter-in-law. You are in vanaprastha ashram, why are you meddling with her life? Because you are supposed to now find the higher meaning. See, you have to understand, you have lived life. Now it is her turn to live it. She has to go through what she has to go through, and children have to go through what they have to go through. So vanaprastha was a period when you are withdrawing, so in such an active engagement. All the party and the Saturday night fever. Now, you know, slowly Saturday nights are for satsang, and you are gradually trying to read through sessions like these and Zoom. You're trying to understand the deeper meaning. And when you have gone through all this, then the old was the moksha sannyasa ashram. So there the highest purushartha was moksha. Moksha was freedom from ignorance, very simply. It had nothing to do with rebirth cycle. We were not such an afraid people. Oh my God, we are not afraid of death. A person who is afraid of death is not an adhikari for moksha. Afraid neither of birth nor of death. That's what created a race which was the Aryan race. True Aryan race, not the Hitlerian Aryan race. So that's the time when you completely free yourself from all ignorance. You discover the soul within and God above, and you are ready now for the next season to play the next innings. Now, this is something which you will see in nature. So there is the spring when life blossoms and all is beautiful. Everything is love. Okay? And in India it's celebrated, by the way, as Vasantotsav. Very few people know. We don't have Valentine's Day. Since you are talking of the Indian context, we use the word Vasantotsav, which is very different. It's springing up of a new life. And then before Vasantotsav, you have that childhood to adolescence, you have the thawing. So many people have Sankranti. So from Sankranti, the warmth has started and you are waiting for the spring. Then there is the fullness of spring. What is the season which follows spring? Almost everywhere, summer. What is summer? Labor, heat, sweat and blood and tears. That's when you grapple life, wrestle with the world forces, till the soil. Nothing may come out, but you sow the seed. So that's summer. What comes after summer? Rain. Purifying rain. Rain that thrashes the mud and the mire. Rain that purifies the leaves as it, it makes them free of dust. So rain comes. After rain, autumn. What is autumn? Withdraw. All the outer leaves are shedding off. And what is the plant doing? The tree doing? It's as if going inside. If you look at autumn, you will feel that. That is the beauty of autumn. That the plant consciousness is as if the tree is withdrawing into itself. Why? For the next spring to arrive. So when we look at life, life gives us these lessons very simply. So we may not use the four in that strictly that way, like nowadays. I don't use this term, but in psychiatry I do use the word midlife transition, and people come to me with crisis in midlife and I tell them it's time to reorient yourself. You are wanting the world to be according to you. No, you reorient. You are in a transition. And if you don't do it, you will suffer and make everybody suffer. So this is how these four, Sri Aurobindo has written about it. I am giving you the adapted version, how I use it. Because all these ancient truths formulas, now today you won't have that. And also during that time, because we believe in rebirth, so there will always be those who have gone through this evolutionary process. And at a young age, like Shukdev, they are ready for the higher truth. So you can't tell them, no, you must first get married and hold. So there are always people who have reached that point where they are. Most people, Sri Aurobindo says, did not go beyond Grahastha Ashram even those days. But now because of evolution fast, so more and more children are coming whom I see 9-year-old, 10-year-old, reading Savitri, taking interest in Savitri, coming up with meanings of Savitri. And I am in contact with children who are from 5-year-old, they are reading Savitri. And when there was a crisis, some child's going on, 10-year-old child, reading Savitri, and parents are a little worried and all. You know what the child reminds? All can be done if the God touch is there. That is the state which is happening. This is one of the signs of evolution fast forward. I come in contact with so many of them. Some of them who regularly, children, it's so beautiful to come in contact. They bring such freshness. They are not afraid. They tell you. They'll tell me also, Alokda, this is not how I think it should be. So wonderful. I love it. Absolutely love it. I say, you are a young Nachiketa, but I am not Vajasravas yet. I tell them, I am also Nachiketa, seeking for that higher fire. I mean, there is no limit to that seeking. So now things are changing. Many of these concepts, which are very solid, they still apply to the through a kind of order. But also you will see the new come in. For like Chaturvarna, Sri Aurobindo speaks about. Always in society you will see these four types. The seekers of knowledge, the warriors and the administrator. Then those who produce and, you know, interchange, and those who are take the joy of service. Now these words have been corrupted. But always in society you will see those who are, and it's because of the evolutionary process. So there are those who are dehichinme, who are connected with the physical world. They understand the physical world. They are good with hatha yoga. But the intrinsic yoga is difficult for them. And they love to do things with hands. Then there are others who become pranichinme. Pranichinme, you will have these who are conscious in the vital. So you will have the Vaishya type and the warrior type. And then those who are manichinme. And then beyond that, the Atma Chaitanya. So this is a truth. But now nature is creating a new type where all the four come together. Sri Aurobindo hints at it in the Mother, first chapter. He says, illumined disciple of truth, a warrior of truth. At the same time, he says, a servant of truth. A lover, prophet and lover and king. So all these, now the new type will transcend it. So you will see a new variety which is coming up, the new race, which at a young age is carrying within itself all these four elements, the four purusharthas simultaneously. So this we have to respect now, which is the demand of the new age. It won't go through the traditional, like marriage. When mother said the days of like marriage is over, she said that, live in, she didn't use the word live in, but people were very shocked. Even now they are shocked. What? But she said the only reason people can stay together, should stay together, is love. Love should be the basis of relationship, not a legal document, not a social approval. So love, not a contract. It should be love. So people were very shocked and they said, mother, this will be misunderstood, all that. She said, okay, those who want to continue with marriage may continue. But then she wrote about what marriage is about. And that's when in the morning we were discussing about around the central fire and all that. So now the crusts are breaking and the inner truth is coming out, which is happening in society. The inner truth. So people, when they get together through all their experimentation, but they want people with whom I can, be an intellectual companion, who can share my aspiration. People are no more just attracted physically. So that's the beautiful thing which is coming up. Sign of the new age. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, one last maybe we can take. Okay, quick, I'll answer in brief.
I guess just to clarify, it seems as though in today's day, to use the inner aspiration more as a guide for that transition versus like at 40 I must go into that.
No, you shouldn't use. Life doesn't flow like that. Never try to make a rule book of life or bind it to fixed formulas. Also, a formula may apply for me perfectly, but it may be useless for somebody else. So Sri Aurobindo at one place says very humorously, rule book for life, puts an exclamation. There's no rule book for life. You have to discover your own rhythm and for somebody. But generally, these are all generalizations. Similarly, there are people who never grow old. Your vital can remain young forever. So, yeah, these things have their own, they are meant to create a kind of order, but, one should not apply. But generally, you will see around your 40s. Also because even hormones change. The biology responds like that. So don't make it rigid that now it's 40, I must quit my job. And there is no need to quit the job. Do the job, but instead of being all about money, try to take interest in something which is higher and truer. Okay, the short answer. Okay, so we can maybe close here. Thank you so much.